It all started in the metastatic space. We had flabbergasted results in the EV-302 study with a doubling of the overall survival, a doubling of the progression-free survival, and 30% of the patients had a complete response even when they had metastasis to the lungs and liver. And in this complete responders, after 2 years, 75% was still in a complete response. So maybe we cured some of the metastasized patients. So why don't bring these flabbergasting results just in the early setting in the muscle-invasive bladder cancer space? And that is what we did in the KEYNOTE-905. We used the same regimen as in the metastatic space in the early setting of MIBC patients, and we chose the very poor frail patients with a lot of comorbidities. This is ineligible patients, MIBC patients. So muscle-invasive bladder cancer that were cisplatin ineligible. During the trial, patients that were cisplatin eligible but declined cisplatin were also allowed, but the majority were cisplatin ineligible. Patients had to must have clinical T2 to T4a in zero or in one, non-metastatic, predominant urothelial histology. And we started with a two-arm trial, only pembro perioperative and versus control. But based on the results in the metastatic space, a third arm was added, enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab perioperative. Then we had a three-arm trial, and the pembrolizumab was given for 1 year perioperative, so three cycles before and 14 cycles after, and the enfortumab vedotin was given for three cycles before and six cycles after. Then the pembro arm stopped for enrollment, and we continued with the two arms, so the surgery upfront followed by observation, by surveillance, or enfortumab vedotin preop and post-op. And that were the results that we presented at ESMO. All patients that were concurrently randomized to the EVP arm versus the control, with primary endpoint of centrally assessed event-free survival and key secondary endpoints of overall survival and PET-CR. And what we have seen for event-free survivors, the primary endpoint was an early and sustained separation of the Kaplan-Meier curves, resulting in a statistical significant hazard ratio of 0.4 in favor of the EVP arm. So the median EFS in the control was 15.7 months and was not reached in the EVP arm. And this was quite amazing. If you look, for example, at 2 years, 39% was event-free in the control arm versus 74.7% in the intervention arm. So what a difference. And it was also translated in the key secondary endpoint of overall survival. Also there, the minimum overall survival of 41 months in the control arm and not reaching the EVP arm, also resulting in statistical significant hazard ratio of 0.5 in favor of the EVP arm. And then you look there at the two-year overall survival, also from 63% to almost 80%. So a big difference. And also the other key secondary endpoint of PET-CR was a hit. In the ITT population, we used all ITT population for the denominator. So also the patient that had an excellent response before the surgery, but they chose not to go for surgery, were also considered non-responders. So even when we would also take them as responders, it would be even higher. But by doing this very honestly, we had a 57.1% of complete PET-CR. So in 57.1%, you tell to the patient after the surgery, there is not a single cancer cell left in your specimen. And this is together with the overall survival and the PET-CR. It was the first trial ever that have shown an overall survival benefit in this patient population and also the highest PET-CR rate ever. So with these three endpoints, that was a hit. This was a very positive study. Yes, first of all, you see in this kind of population, when you try to cure them, but when you include surgery in this population, you have a lot of adverse events. So also in the control arm, where the patient did not receive any systemic therapy, you had a lot of AEs, high-grade AEs, serious AEs, because you do a very invasive procedure. So also this trial maybe opens the future, will shape the future for surgery-free regimen if we have very active systemic therapy. So this is point number one. A lot of AEs also in the control arm. It means you have a very invasive procedure. But when you look at the EVP arm, it was consistent overall safety. It was consistent with prior experience with EVP in the metastatic space. With EV, you expect skin tags, especially in the first 2 months. If you have an experienced doctor, it's very manageable. And then on the longer run, you have polyneuropathy, mostly grade one, grade two. If you have a grade three, it's often because your doctor didn't stop early on. But it's the same as we expect as in the metastatic space. You have that skin tox and polyneuropathy related to EV, and you have that autoimmune disorders that you can expect with Pembro, but it was the same as we have from the Pembro safety profile as is other studies. I think all these patients should receive EVP when it's available in the region they live in. So I can only hope that it will be widely available around the world. So I'm so glad that it has FDA approval. I hope that also for Europe and other regions, it will follow soon, that we as a doctor will be able to give this as a standard of care for this patient population. And for their counterparts, the cis-eligible population, which was a minority in this population, you should say, based on this trial, it's mainly for cis-ineligible. But as of today, there was a press release that also in the cis-eligible population, there was a hit for overall survival, PFS. So I'm eagerly awaiting to see the full data set there. But based on this trial, it's the majority is for the cis-ineligible population. But I think it should be available as soon as possible for all cis-ineligible MIBC patients.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.